Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The Sports Virus Podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Virus Podcast, everybody. I'm Joe Castellano, along with Ray Woodson, and we're brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael, California, where they've had the lowest prices in Marin County for over 60 years. And we're brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Well, Ray, the Warriors season is over. It's hard to believe I'm saying that, especially after the way they played at the end of the season. I'm not going to say that I thought it was a foregone conclusion that they would beat the Kings, but I favored the Warriors, and they came out and did not play well the entire game, really. Just a lot of mistakes, especially the turnovers and allowing the Kings to have so many second-chance opportunities. Those are the two big issues that come to mind right away. What did you think of the last game of the Warriors season?
An emphatic end to the dynasty.
Yeah.
That's what it was. That's what it felt like. Let's be realistic about this. I'm hearing Boys to Men singing End of the Road. It's been a great, great run. They changed basketball, but the league has caught up to them and passed them. That's clear. When you know, actually, the Warriors played pretty well the second half of the year to get to a 10 seed. Okay, that's how tough it is in the Western Conference now.
Yeah.
So much talent, so many good teams. Competition is really, really tough now. So the Warriors kind of ran in place, and in running in place, they got passed. You know, all the numbers aren't negative with them. They had two more wins than last year. Last year was good enough for a sixth. This year, they get bounced in the play-in tournament, as they did a few years ago. And, you know, when you get to the point where it's win or go home, all bets are off. You know, you put yourself in that position, and you have to take what comes with that. The Kings came out determined to avenge the Game 7 loss last year when Steph broke their hearts, and they broke Steph's heart last night. They bracketed him. They really did a good job on him. Also, the Warriors played into that because there wasn't a lot of good ball movement. There are a lot of turnovers. They got killed on the boards in the first half. The Kings were younger, stronger, faster, quicker, and they brought force from the opening tip. It was clear, you know, who was the aggressor in this game, and the rest were letting them play on top of that. So you throw that all into a ball. It was a blowout loss, and everybody's going to focus on Klay going 0 for 10, and sure, that was a factor. That's one of the reasons that Steph really couldn't get going. They felt secure, the Kings did, in double-triple-teaming him sometimes and restricting his movement off the ball when he's most dangerous, because they didn't feel like Klay was a threat, you know, and that was the yin and yang of the Warriors for many years, the spacing. And when Klay was at his best and Steph was at his best, absolutely lethal. It's not that way anymore.
Yeah, it looked to me, Ray, like a team that ran out of gas. You know, they used so much energy to win 27 of their last 39. To you know, get in that position, and they really played well down the stretch. And Klay Thompson, I thought he really turned his season around. I really love the way he played the second half of the season, but he looked completely out of gas, just like a number of players. And to go 0 for 10, once he lost his confidence there, I felt like there was just no turning back. He didn't really get good shots, and he wasn't even moving well on defense. And, of course, he's the key question for the offseason. And, you know, if you base it on that game, there's no way you'd bring him back. But I think you have to look at the season as a whole, and I would bring him back based on the way he played in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of people who are using recency bias and looking at that game and saying that's the end of the line for him. It has to be. But, you know, let me give you some more facts. The last 4 weeks, he shot 48% from the floor and 42% from three.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty close to his career numbers. No, he's not the defender he used to be because of the injuries he's had and because of age. But he's still a valuable player. So the question comes down to, and I think it's the ball is in Klay's court. Is he willing to accept X amount of money for a lesser role? You know, he did a good job of accepting coming off the bench and did pretty well doing that. Then he got back in the starting lineup, did pretty well. He had a horrible game last night. You'd hate to think that's the last time we see him in a Warriors uniform. It could be, but I think it really comes down to what Clay is willing to accept. I'll throw out a figure. Let's say the Warriors say $20 million, and you're going to be coming off the bench. You know, he said before how he'd like to retire as a Warrior along with Draymond and Steph. It may not be possible, but if he's really sincere about that, would he accept that? Because, you know, the Joe Lacob and the front office have expressed a desire to get out of the salary tax and the luxury tax. They'd like to get completely under that level if they can. And that, by the way, means goodbye Chris Paul, I'd imagine, and his $30 million, one way or the other. I bet Clay is regretting not taking the 2-48 last summer. You know,
yeah.
You look back on it now, what a rough year for him. Another rough year for the team in many respects. You know, losing an assistant coach who collapsed in front of them during a dinner in Salt Lake City. How traumatic can that be? And that, you know, that you carry that through with you for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they still remember and love Coach Decky. And then all the drama with Draymond once again and being suspended. And then his suspension, you know, was one of the reasons that they had to struggle to get to the 10 seed. Now, when he came back, he played pretty well. He was on his best behavior except for one game, you know. But that's what you're going to get with Draymond. Is he still worth it? Is he still a good enough defender? He showed down the stretch he still can be, you know. So, again, yeah, this game was brutal. It spells the end of a dynasty as we've known it, but can the Warriors still go on with the big three and get younger? You know, I think they did to an extent this year because they brought in Podziemski. He did a good job. Kuminga, finally, Steve Kerr got him a bigger role, and I think you can fault Steve Kerr for not acting sooner on that. Kuminga's a guy that they can move forward with. And then Trayce Jackson-Davis, who should have played more last night, I felt, but he's part of the future too. So now it comes down to, you know, parlaying some of those other pieces and going out and getting a veteran, a younger veteran, to make this team more athletic, because it's clear they need that. You know, I feel like I'm talking about the San Francisco Giants, Joe, from about 6 or 7 years ago. Hung on to the old players too long and slowed down and the league passed them up. You know, there's a problem with legacy contracts, as the Giants demonstrated. But at the same time, you look at these guys and you know, this isn't going to be an Aubrey Huff situation where somebody has a good year and helps them win a World Series and then just doesn't do anything, hardly at all. Steph is still very close to his peak level, although he faded a little bit down the stretch. He's still a very effective player. Draymond's still a very good defender, and you know, he's the sort of the traffic cop on defense and on offense. Clay can still be a contributor. He showed that down the stretch, but he's got to have a reduced role because I think you've got to preserve those legs.
Yeah, I think the minutes have to go down for all three of those players. I mean, even Curry, you can't be counting on him to play the same amount of minutes. So that means those younger players do have to step up. Certainly Moses Moody looked great in the game yesterday. He was the one player who really had it together, I thought, out of everybody. Trayce Jackson-Davis, I love what he did this year. I agree, he could have played more. I think early on, they were trying to get him the ball, and it just he was getting denied so much that Steve Kerr felt like he had to do something there. But yeah, these young players, they could definitely build around it. But if the Warriors are going to make any kind of noise next year in the postseason, they're going to have to trade for, you know, a big-time player. I don't know who it's going to be or how they're going to do that, but I agree that with everybody who's saying that there have to be changes because there's going to have to be some change somewhere. And I don't know who gets traded out of the young player group or, you know, if Clay doesn't come back, but there's going to have to be somebody who makes an impact because there's definitely at least one piece missing on this team.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned Moody as part of that young group, but he might be somebody who's marketable too. And you notice I didn't mention Andrew Wiggins as part of the future. I don't know. They can't trade him straight up and get a big-time talent, but they could possibly package him. Everybody's going to want Kuminga, and I'd say hands off that. You know, he's just coming into his own, and he's only 21 years old. This is the kind of player that the Warriors desperately need. And, you know, he gave them sort of an infusion of energy in the second half of the season. He got in the starting lineup. You know, part of the problem was it was tough to play Kuminga and Wiggins together. But then Draymond came back, and he did make that possible for a while. But I think, you know, to me, if you can swing a deal involving Wiggins, and that could get you somebody back who's maybe an athletic wing or big man or another outside shooting threat, you absolutely do it.
Yeah, Wiggins, I mean, the inconsistency is really what hurts.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not even talking about that he misses games for personal issues. That happens. I'm talking about that, you know, one game he goes out there and he looks like a world beater and, you know, he shows off his skills. And then there's another game where he just doesn't seem interested. And he's very inconsistent with his shooting. I mean, yeah, in the NBA that happens where you get hot and cold. But, I mean, he just – the highs and lows are almost too much. I'd rather have a more consistent player there.
Oh, yeah, that's been the weakness, the dependability or lack thereof. And, you know, I'd say all in all, if you're able to swing a deal and get something back that'll help you, the experience with the Warriors was a positive one because, you know, he came here and helped them win a championship. And he was great in the postseason in 22 and especially in the finals. There was some talk about him being the finals MVP. And I would say he was second. But, yeah, the inconsistency, you just can't have it. You need to depend on somebody, A, being there. And, you know, again, don't fault him for that, for the reasons that he had to leave the team. But, B, being mentally locked in every single night. And it didn't appear he was. And for a guy with that talent, it's frustrating. And the other part of it is he's closing in on 30 years old now. So you better make a deal now. If you are going to trade him.
Yeah. You got Curry, who's 36. Green and Thompson are 34. So as these guys get older, it just becomes more difficult to figure out the minutes. I thought Steve Kerr did a really good job this year overall because, I mean, it was probably his most challenging year as far as trying to figure out the minutes for the veterans, how much to play the young guys. He admitted when he made some mistakes, you know, when he didn't play Moody when he was playing well. He didn't play him as much as maybe he should have in Kuminga. The issues yeah. there, you know, trying to figure out Chris Paul. I mean, it's probably his most challenging season, but it's almost going to get more challenging going forward when you have these legacy players mixed in with the younger players. And I thought, actually, Ray, that Chris Mullin made a great point on the postgame show yesterday. He was saying that you've got these veteran players who are a little bit past their prime. You've got these younger players who are not quite at their prime. So nobody's yeah. really in that right position to be making a championship run right now. So that's the real challenge going forward.
Yeah, they're no man's land where that's concerned. That's why you try to go out and get a veteran, but a veteran who is, you know, still relatively young and a little more athletic than what they've had. And that's how you move forward. Does that mean you're going to be a championship contender? Maybe not. But there's still enough there to make a run of the playoffs every year, even in the tough Western Conference. But what Steve Kerr is going to have to get past dealing with the big three, if they do come back, is sentimentality. You know, you have to recognize you've got to work in these younger players more than he's shown a willingness to do up to this point, with the exception of finally inserting Kuminga. And Moses Moody, his development has been hurt by the fact that he has not been in some games. Then he comes back and plays in some games. You know, the inconsistency for Moody as far as playing time hurts his development. He's been a true pro about it, and so has Kevon Looney, for that matter. I think for Kevon, it's also tough because he's not a terribly athletic player. He's strong. He's tough. He's smart. And he can rebound. He still has a role on this team, but it's got to be reduced as well. So I think what Steve Kerr has to get past is, you know, leaning too much on Steph, Clay, and Draymond going forward, recognizing, I think he said it, that they can't put everything on Steph's shoulders. They've got to dial back their minutes. They've got to give this younger group, whoever that might be, more playing time. So he's got to resist, you know, and they've got to have a sit-down about this if they are back together, that they've got to have reduced minutes, still be contributors, still have consistent minutes, but reduced to save them for the long season.
Coming up, we'll talk about the San Francisco Giants when the Sports Virus Podcast continues.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give them a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. All right, let's move on to talk about the San Francisco Giants, who actually, as we record this podcast on Wednesday morning, they're playing right now in Miami against the Marlins, leading 1-0 in the sixth inning. And, it's been kind of a slow start at 7-11, so early, not really taking advantage of the fact that the Dodgers aren't playing so great at 12-8. But for the Giants, I feel like they just don't have enough in their lineup right now. I know in the offseason, on paper, it looked pretty good when you brought in Matt Chapman and Jorge Soler, and, you signed some free agents like that, and it looks like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a lot better. But other than Michael Conforto, nobody has really been hot for San Francisco. Chapman's hit some home runs, but, he's not hitting for average. Everybody seems to kind of be off to that slow start you don't want to see on the offensive side.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's more of the same with this team, right? You get some pretty good pitching. They've got better defense, I think. They are making more solid contact, which is encouraging. They're not hitting a clutch, however, and that's part of the reason their run production is down a little bit. They're just sort of there right now, and it's kind of what they were last year. They might hover around 500. Nothing exciting. I mean, I think they did a decent job in the end piecing it together, but is Blake Snell going to come back to his Cy Young form? That's going to be a big part of it. It's still very early for him. Jordan Hicks looks like they've found something, that's for sure. When Cobb comes back, how good is he going to be? The question is, when Robbie Ray comes back, are they still going to be in contention? So what you hope is nobody in that division runs away with it, nobody in the wild card runs away with it, and you try to stay as close to 500 as you can. I mean, mediocrity. That's what it is. It's what they've been for the most part for the last few years. Not a terribly exciting team. They still don't have, outside of Conforto, I ask the question again, is there a guy that the pitchers say, oh, we can't let this guy beat them? Is there a guy you pitch around? They've got some pop. They've got a little more of that. They're a little better in incremental ways than they were last year, but is it good enough? I don't know.
Well, it's
still an embryo.
It is. And I'm thinking, when I look at a roster, I want to see at least a couple of players that put pressure on the defense with their speed, and they just don't have that. Tyler Fitzgerald's really the only guy who can run a little bit. Nobody else. Even Jung-Hoo Lee at the leadoff spot, he's not a base stealer. They need somebody who puts the pressure on the defense, and they just don't have it on their roster. It seems like it's really a void, I think, for a team, because when you're trying to just squeeze across that one run, if you could steal a base or just go in first to third, whatever it is, that team speed, that they just don't have it.
Yeah, it feels like we're talking about some of the same issues with the Warriors again. A little more athleticism, right? They're getting there, but not right where they need to be. They don't have those type of guys who can get the extra base. And they haven't, really, for a while. They've got some decent ball players. They've got some decent hitters. I think they're going to end up putting decent numbers. It's going to have to come down to the pitching, I think. And I think their defense is a little bit better. But it's far from a spellbinding lineup that they put out there. There's not a lot of excitement there. Maybe Jung-Hoo Lee is going to be that sort of player. I don't know. He's got good bat-to-ball skills, that's for sure. But is he going to get on base enough as a leadoff hitter?
Yeah, I like the way he uses the whole field. He's not Ichiro, but it's kind of like that same style where, you know, he seems off balance, but he's just going to hit line drives around the field. So, you know, so far he's been pretty good. I don't know that he's going to be a 300 hitter in the major leagues, but, you know, he's definitely a guy who's going to get on base quite a bit.
Yeah, well, you hope he does. I mean, or is he going to be one of those guys with an empty average, as they say, where he doesn't draw a lot of walks? You know, they're having him hitting third today, by the way. So
yeah, they did that yesterday, which I thought was a little odd, but
yeah. And you're talking about 260 average and a 309 on base. Yeah, you know, 309 is not good enough for a leadoff hitter, but it's very early in the season, small sample size. And by the way, the Marlins have tied it up 1-1 as we speak.
Yeah.
They're giving you live updates on a game. By the way, you probably broke some news there. A lot of people may not have known a game was actually happening. Maybe they don't in Miami. So if there's somebody listening to their podcast, still time to catch the end of the game. I'm sure there's plenty of good seats for a 4-14 team. But, yeah, I mean, when Giants are struggling to beat a 4-14 team, right? They had to come from behind the first night, and then they lost last night. Now it's 1-1. That's not terribly encouraging either. The early returns are not encouraging, but, you know, look at the calendar. Don't make any rash judgments till May, at least.
Yeah, and Blake Snell is kind of in that category because he is not off to a great start at all, going 0-2, 12.86 ERA in his first couple of starts. But, yeah, I mean, he didn't have a real spring training, and, you know, he's the one guy I don't worry so much about him. I think I am more encouraged about the overall pitching, you know, the starting pitching, because Jordan Hicks so far is, you know, he's pretty surprising in that, going from being a bullpen guy to a starter and working, you know, five or six innings already. I can only see him adding to that. He's got great stuff. So, it looks like Jordan Hicks is going to be a valuable member of this rotation going forward.
Well, it's so far so good. And what he's learned to do, it appears, is dial it back a little bit. You know, coming out of the bullpen, he was showing his ungodly sinker at 99, 100 miles an hour. Now he's throwing that and maybe the split or two a few miles an hour less, and he's still able to be effective and pretty good sweeper as well. So, I mean, yeah, the stuff is there. He's learning how to pace himself as a starter, and that's, you know, a big question for everybody who gets converted like that, and there were legitimate questions about this guy. But so far, yeah, he looks really, really good and looks like a worthy investment. It makes me wonder, you know, why other teams didn't see this in him, but it happens sometimes. You know, different pitching staff, coaching staffs see different things in a player. So, that's the one, I think, bright spot early on in the season. If they can get Snell together along with Harrison, Keaton Wynn hasn't been that bad, except for one really bad outing. And, you know, the bullpen has been sort of up and down, but that starting rotation could end up being pretty darn good. It's just a matter of if they're going to have enough offense to make that, you know, work for them. The other encouraging part is the left side of the infield defensively is better than it was last year. And I think that was – I even posted that on social media before Snell signed. I said, believe me, that kind of stuff is not lost on a left-handed pitcher like Blake Snell. And so he's come here, and so far, forget about the money. He hasn't really earned that yet. He's still going through spring training. But, you know, let's see how he is in May, and then we can make a judgment.
I want to talk to you about a rule that is being sort of enforced or emphasized in a different way, and it's called Rule 6.00. And that rule has to do with blocking bases as an infielder. And I didn't think much about it, Ray, you know, as far as – you know, is this a good or bad emphasis that they're putting on the rule? Until I saw a play recently where Matt Chapman was at third base, and he was just, he's playing the position normally, the throw's coming in, he just grabs the ball, he makes a tag on the runner, and the runner is out by a mile, and then he's called safe because Matt Chapman didn't give him enough room to slide. And it just, it bothered me because if you're an infielder who's learned how to play that position for so long and the positioning, and it wasn't so obvious that he's trying to block him, it just seemed like they were trying too hard. And I guess, you know, they're trying to make it so that there isn't obstruction for these base runners so that they can get to the base. And it's different than the home plate rule. It's a different rule altogether, but just more of an emphasis you know, on what's going on the bases. I don't know that I agree with trying to do that so much so that you're changing the game in a way that I really didn't like. I mean, I thought for sure that runner's out and they're going to make that save. So I don't know what they're doing with that rule. I don't know what you think of that. Have you seen any plays like that so far?
Well, there's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, right?
Right.
And the spirit of the law is for the fielder not to gain an unfair advantage by blocking the base
right.
for a guy who might be safer out. It's a close play. But when it's like that, and it's obvious he's going to be out. You know, it seems like you would have some wiggle room and be open to interpretation. You know, then it comes down to the umpires. You know, how do they view it? Are they going to take any chances if they get a call from the league office saying, "Hey, you missed that guy. You know, Chapman blocking the bag on that tag there," and you come back and say, "Well, he was going to be out anyway." And then the front office of baseball says, well, you can't assume that, and it gets into a whole conversation about that. If you're an umpire, maybe you want to avoid that kind of hassle. You know, so
yeah.
you just go by the rule book. All right? But sometimes following the letter of the law doesn't really get to the spirit of the law, and I think this is one of those cases, and baseball is in danger of tinkering itself to death.
Exactly.
You know, this has been going on for a few years now. It's getting ridiculous, I think. And you know, I mean, look at the national numbers; they're not great. You know, they're still getting good crowds for games, and the regional broadcasts, I guess, in some cases, are doing well. You know, Bally Sports notwithstanding, but you know, they're a sport that's struggling to remain a premier sport and trying to become more watchable. But in trying to do so, they've turned the game into something it is not, you know, that it was not supposed to be. Again, that the letter of the law or the spirit of the law, the you know, what you think the game is going to be as to what it really is supposed to be. And, you know, when you got people who aren't crazy about the game trying to change the game, you get a game that's not going to gain new fans, right? You're just giving way to people who already disliked the game, and you're
right.
trying to win them. You're trying to win them back. No, just be who you are, right? Be the game that you are. And you know, if it means you've got 2.5 hour game and the pace is slow for some people, so be it. It's a new era. It's not 1960 anymore. You just have to adjust to that. And the other thing they have to do is promote the stars of the game. The problem is one of your stars of the game just had a problem with his interpreter in gambling.
Yeah, I know.
You know, so, and oh, by the way, you and you're not the only professional sport to do this, are getting in bed with gambling apps.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's another thing. The fantasy football, the fantasy baseball, the gambling apps create all sorts of crazy influences on the game to where it becomes something that, I don't know, it doesn't look like it used to. And I'm sounding like the old man on the porch here, like
right.
You know, like there wasn't gambling in baseball 100 years ago. Oh, remember the Black Sox scandal? You know, remember Hal the Prince Chase? You know, there have been gambling elements in the game for a long, long time, but now it's so easy to do it. Right?
Oh yeah,
and
no,
you had
an
NBA player banned today from the Raptors for being involved in gambling. So it's out there. Even with you would have thought with all the money that the athletes are getting nowadays, at least the school of thought was they'd be avoiding the temptation of gambling because they'd have so much money they wouldn't need that. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case now.
Yeah, I just gambling's a big problem. You know, going back to the play at third base, I think playing defense is so hard in sports today because now you're trying to make it so that, you know, an infielder has to think about exactly where he's positioned, just like the catchers had to do that. In the NFL, you know, players are constantly worried about, okay, I can't hit him up high, I can't hit him up low. It's really almost impossible to play defense. And even in the NBA, it was too. They were making so many calls, and I think they backed off of that after the All-Star break where they weren't making as many calls. And actually, you know, I like the way the game was officiated yesterday. They allowed for more physicality. It didn't work out the Warriors' way, but I think that's more in line with what it should be, where you can get physical. And that's the thing with all these sports. I mean, you want to prevent injuries, but you're also making it so hard to play defense.
Yeah, well, I mean, probably the biggest change in the NBA in the last 20 years was the end of the hand check, right?
Right.
When they started enforcing against the hand check about 20 years ago, the game changed. And then along comes Steph Curry and the Warriors, and they change it some more. And now, you know, everybody growing up is about playing that style of basketball. And sometimes below the rim. Some of them are able to go above the rim. But in either case, it's been all about offense. And by the way, the game has never been more popular. It's never been, in my mind, more watchable outside of the Lakers and the Celtics rivalry in the 80s. That was awesome basketball. But, they've tried to dial it back a little bit, and they let them play last night, that's for sure. And that's one of the reasons that the Kings were so dominant. They just brought some force, and they didn't draw any whistles because of that. But you're always trying to strike this balance, and even Steve Kerr talked about it during the season, that they've legislated defense out of the league. And it gets to the point where it is a little bit ridiculous when you have 147 to 144 games all the time.
Yeah.
But you don't want it to turn back into the 90s either, when it was, a mud wrestling event. it was really tough to watch sometimes. So basketball has done, I think, a pretty good job of striking that balance. Football remains very popular because they're protecting their quarterbacks and their skill position players. But, again, you don't want to go too far with that. Baseball is still figuring it out. They're sort of in the netherland right now when it comes to all these rule changes and how it looks for the game.
All right, well, to finish up here, Ray, getting back to where we started, the Kings beating the Warriors. All they have to do now is beat the Pelicans on the road and then go play the Oklahoma City Thunder, the top seed in the Western Conference. That's not going to be an easy road. You know, even if the Warriors had won, that was really going to be a difficult road to follow.
Yeah, well, I look at OKC and I see the Warriors 10 years ago. I think they've remade their roster after the departure of guys like Durant and Harden. And they've done a really good job of rebuilding that team. And now they have a young, energetic core that's really exciting to watch. Very reminiscent of the Warriors, I think, a decade ago. Now, are they going to be like that team in 2014 and 2015 that won a championship maybe a year earlier than they expected? It's going to be a very tough road for OKC, but they're going to be a fun team to watch. I still wouldn't sleep on Denver no matter what, given their experience. But, it's going to be tough for the Kings because they haven't beaten the Pelicans this year. The question is whether Zion Williamson's quad is going to affect him for that next game. But if he's healthy, then it's going to be tough for the Kings even to get by New Orleans. I don't see the Kings going deep into the playoffs. It was a satisfying win for them last night. It's good for the franchise and all that to exorcise a demon. But in the grand scheme, with Monk out, I don't know when Monk's coming back, if he's even going to be able to help him out. And Herter is out as well. It's going to be tough for this team to go very far.
Yeah, probably the last time the beam gets lit in Sacramento.
I wonder what happens if you're flying over Sacramento and they light the beam and it hits your plane. It's got to be distracting if you're a pilot.
Yeah, scary stuff. All right, Ray. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
All right. The Giants lead 2-1 in the bottom of the seventh in Miami for those keeping score.
Woohoo! That's Ray Woodson. I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Sports Virus Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.